Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for September the 4th, 2020. This is episode number 22. Today, we'll be talking about the Tesla Model 3 setting a new Pikes Peak record, the Lucid Air demonstrates a 9.9-second quarter-mile time, and the Škoda Enyaq iV reveal previews the VW ID.4. I'm Dominic Chione, Inside EVs editor and Inside EVs forum moderator. Joining us today, we have Tom Malogny, multiple EV owner and Inside EVs editor. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, we have Kyle Connor from the Out of Spec Motoring and One Lap YouTube channels. He also puts together super awesome videos for the new Inside EVs YouTube channel. Go subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. So welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. Let's dive into it. Last week, we were talking about the crazy competition at Pikes Peak and how two of the three Tesla Model 3s running in the exhibition class had crashed. Somehow, though, one of those teams have bounced back, and now a Tesla Model 3 has taken the top two exhibition class spots in the Pikes Peak climb. So, Kyle, you were there for all that action. Want to fill us in?
Yeah, just got back from Pikes Peak. It was an incredible race. We had so much fun, actually. But, you know, underneath that fun, there was a lot of competition and a lot of drama this year. It was pretty exciting. So the unplugged car that we spoke about last week, I believe we spoke when it was in the shop, ended up, it did get fixed from that accident with Randy Popes behind the wheel, you know, smashed into that wall, spun all around. They had to buy another Model 3 Performance, slap in the drivetrain out of it, excluding the battery, so pretty much front and rear subframe, and they got it back up and working, and it worked fine. They went testing. Everything was great. Come race day, which we didn't talk about last week, they made their run up the hill. Three corners in, the battery goes from green to bright red, which means it's thermal throttling, basically. And we're not exactly sure why. I don't even know if they know why yet. And I've never seen that behavior from track mode. Typically what will happen when something gets hot is it goes green, yellow, orange, red, and progressively ramps down your power available. And that's really at the limit of driving, not even early on like this was. But I think there was either air in the cooling system, they hot spotted something in the battery pack or drivetrain, because again, they had to sit overnight and it was really cold out. And so batteries don't like to have just a ton of juice pulled out of them when they're cold. And then, you know, it could just be a sensor issue as well. So that hampered their run. But the big story here, I think, is Blake Fuller's run in the stock Model 3, beating everyone in the entire exhibition class, including the unplugged modified Tesla. Granted, the Tesla was down on power, the unplugged car, but the cornering speeds were still just as high as they normally were, significantly higher than Blake's car, because Blake was running a stock car on street tires. They were R888Rs, but still street DOT-approved tires, because he's going after a production electric vehicle class. And so this is a car that broke the entire electric vehicle record up the hill. All time for production EVs. Of course, it's not faster than the IDR, and it broke the exhibition class win. I should say it took the win for that entire class. So huge props to Blake. He drove the wheels off that thing on the way up, had a really solid run. If you haven't had a chance yet, take a look at the in-car footage, because he was just wheeling that thing the entire way. It was really great. And what a cool win for him. And yeah, an amazing Pikes Peak for sure.
Yeah, do you know if we have the in-car video of that on the site?
I'm not sure if we have an article up with the in-cars yet, but we can certainly get it up at some point this week.
Yeah. I'll look into that and see if we can get that up by the time the show is up, because it's always great to watch the Pikes Peak from like driver's point of view, going up through that. It's like, yeah, it's amazing. So I understand that the Blake Fuller car is going to find a home at your place, and you'll have access to it. So do you have some plans for it? And are you accepting any suggestions from the audience or from
So we're going to have the car back in North Carolina. That's it right there. I'm not sure the time split. Basically, Dave Anderson, the owner of this car, who goes by EV Dave on YouTube, donated the car to the Pikes Peak project. And the goal of this car is it was just an extra Model 3 performance he had, is to really show what electric vehicles can do in a performance environment, whether it's a track day or a, you know, Pikes Peak type event or something like this that gets a lot of eyes on it. So we're not sure what's next. Of course, the car will be here in North Carolina. We'll have full access to it anytime, and it'll be really great. I kind of want to shoot a Gymkhana style video with it, which would be kind of fun. So we'll see what we can do, but I definitely got to jump something and it has to drift and we have to blow something up for that video. So that'll be kind of fun, but definitely let us know what you guys want to see in the comments. I'll probably do a whole series that's in depth on track mode, talking about each setting, how it handles, what it does. And then maybe we'll take it to a Formula E race and cover things like this. So we'll see what happens. But this is kind of what we're going for.
Can you guys do like viewer ride-alongs? Or is that just an insurance nightmare?
No, we can do ride-alongs. You know,
I mean, it'd be so cool if, like, if, you know, if people watching this video are listening to the podcast and somewhere within a drivable area to you, like they could, I don't know, like book a day for a reasonable cost because you're an amazing track driver. We've got this Tesla here. And it'd be so cool. Like, it'd be a great, you know, Father's Day present for somebody. What do you get someone who's got everything? Like, well, get them experience. Put them in the car with Kyle. Go to his track. Sit in the passenger seat. Maybe even get some driver training. That'd be so, like, that kind of thing would be so, so cool. Now, Tesla aren't going to do that off their bat. They're too busy making cars. But it'd be really cool. Like, if we could do something like that at your track and, you know, for a reasonable cost. And like I said, it's probably an insurance nightmare. But, you know, it'd be amazing to give people, like, an experience of the kind of speeds that you and other drivers get to experience, but we don't because, you know, we drive on public roads and hopefully
that's
sensibly.
Totally doable. That's 100% doable. And we have people who come by now for ride alongs anyway. I don't charge them anything for it. They just come and hang out for a few hours and then leave. But, you know, that's no problem. But, we should put something, I think, formal together for that. If, you know, if we're going to keep the car there full time, we'll put the passenger seat in, maybe the rear seats, and we'll just do hot laps in it all the time because we're 1 mile off I-95. So it's a perfect location for people traveling through.
And that is kind of it falls within the mission of the car, right? To just demonstrate the performance capabilities of the Tesla Model 3 performance.
Right. Absolutely. So the scheduling thing will be, you know, we'll have to schedule it around when the car is at the track, not off at another event, doing things with someone else. So yeah, but it doesn't seem too difficult. You can always use my Model 3 as well.
Kyle, another thing that you might want to consider answering in one of your videos. One of the things I noticed was I saw a few comments that people were asking, why were there three Model 3s there? And nobody brought, say, you know, a Model S Raven. The car's got more power, it's faster. Is it just that the Model 3 will handle better and that type of run is all about handling? Are there other reasons? But I saw quite a few people comment and wonder why nobody brought an S there.
Oh, pretty interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty widely known that the Model S is just old technology at this point, especially when it comes to its thermal management. So you go down the first or second straightaway in the Model S and it's thermal limiting and cutting power. Blake actually used to hold the record for production EV with a P90D Ludicrous, which, again, is faster than his Model 3 performance in a straight line. But it was 45 seconds slower up the mountain just because of its thermal longevity issues. Mm-hmm. And it purely comes down to Model 3 is a lighter, better handling car, but not even that so much. It's just the power that it can do. So next year for Pikes Peak, how cool would it be to run a Taycan or a Lucid Air up the mountain? Because those both seem to be promising some good thermal longevity, some great engineering, and both could potentially be pretty quick.
Yeah, that's a good point. Hey, speaking of the Lucid Air, so Lucid continues to raise eyebrows ahead of its official debut of the Air premium sedan. This week, the company released video showing showing the air doing the quarter mile in just 9.9 seconds. That's faster than the Porsche Taycan and the Tesla Model S Raven with cheetah stance. That's faster than any production electric, save for the Rimac Concept One, which that ran a 9.9 in Michigan a few years back as well, racing against a Porsche 918, by the way. So to sum up the last week or so, the Lucid Air will have 517 miles of range. It showed us it can fast charge 300 miles in 20 minutes. And now it's faster than anything this side of a million-dollar supercar. Tom, is Lucid even from planet Earth? Like, what is going on over there?
Yeah, they seem to really be kind of reinventing the electric car. As you mentioned, it's not just about the fact that the car can beat pretty much anything in a quarter mile. It has the lowest drag coefficient of any car at 0.21. It has the longest driving range of any electric vehicle, fastest charging, the most interior space of any car in its class. It has the most efficient powertrain. It can go the furthest per kilowatt hour of energy. And now it's also the fastest. You know, that those two things usually don't always meet, being the fastest, the most powerful, and the most efficient. But Lucid seems to really have done a fantastic job here. And, you know, we have a lot more information coming next week on September 9th at the reveal. We have a ton of embargoed information. I think the public is going to really love to some of the things that we're going to be able to talk about then. But for now, they wanted to give us this little tease with this drag race. And it certainly piqued a lot of interest, you know, getting under 10 seconds in the quarter mile on a production luxury car. That's just off the charts crazy. And, you know, it might not even be the fastest Lucid Air. There's been rumors, you know, for the past year or so that Lucid might be making a performance version of the car. We don't have anything specific on that yet, but one of the things I thought was really interesting, if you notice at the end of that video, earlier in the video, you see the Lucid drag racing Model S, and it that's when it does the 9.9 seconds, beats the Model S. But then at the very end, they line it up against a Porsche Taycan, and that's a different car. There's talk that might be their performance version, and they're giving us a little taste of that. But nothing's confirmed. But knowing Lucid and how they seem to be so performance oriented, I wouldn't be surprised if we find a faster version of this car coming out, you know, a year later or so after the initial Air launches.
Wow, if I try and kind of just scrub the scroll wheel there, like that's a different car to the one we see. It's only a few frames. It's really really quick. If I can screenshot that, like that's the car. So this is the one which does the record.
Right.
So this is, and it's got blue livery on the side. It's got Lucid in white writing down pretty much most of the side of the car, mostly black at the front and white at the back. But then there's just a couple of frames where this car, different livery. Now it could just be, you know, the same car, but they've painted it differently. But I don't know, like it's just a couple of frames that they've put this one on screen for against the Taycan, not against the Model S. So, I mean, that's no accident. Like they've put that into the video for a reason. But oh man, that would be. Can it get any faster than 9.9 seconds? Like, how much speed do you need? That's amazing.
And that's ridiculously quick.
What Martin just said, that's no accident. Companies don't do things by accident. You know, this is the very end. We get a quick glimpse of it. I think this was definitely one of the things that later on you're going to hear. Oh, and remember that video we released 6 months ago? You actually saw, you know, the car that can do X, Y, and Z. So, but it's all just speculation at this point. But, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence. I think they gave us a little taste of something special there.
Right.
Guys, check out the performance version. It has that spoiler lip on the back. Again, my speculation
on
the performance version, but that's what I think giving it away.
Oh, look at that. There's extra stuff to keep it glued to the ground. I hadn't seen that.
Good catch. I don't think this is an accident, Martin. You know, I think they're giving us something there, and you know, just a little extra taste. But like you said, how fast could it be? You know, this is 9.9 seconds on the regular version. They wouldn't release a performance version if it just did 9.7. You know, knowing what Lucid's been doing and how they've been just crushing every point so far, like it would have to be under 9.5 seconds for it to be worth doing this.
Yeah, so, completely. It's
going to be like faster than like the world's fastest supercar, and it's like an executive luxury sedan.
What I really like about Lucid is, and that's different to many car companies. They seem to have got this balance between they've kept a lot secret. They've got enough of the hype machine going, and yet they're engaging. Like they engaged. You were saying last week or the week before, Tom, that you're going to get on a. Was it them that invited you to get on a plane at some point? And you were like, "Look, just with COVID and stuff, I'm not sure." And they were like, "Okay, fine, we'll do some stuff over the phone, even in advance." And you've got to keep it under wraps. I know there's some stuff you can't tell us. And I just like that's it. They engage with people like us and with the fans and with social, with this YouTube video. You don't just put a couple of frames of a different car in. Like they seem to be engaging in a way that other car companies don't want to, where they've got to kind of keep everything secret and under wraps until the big reveal. And I think that's really smart because it's building the hype. It's giving nothing away. And yet it's getting us talking about it and getting us excited. I mean, sure, it's a car that probably isn't in my price range to go out and, you know, take money out of the bank and just go and buy. But I'm excited about this car because we know that technology trickles down. So when it gets to the cars that I can afford, technology, battery efficiency, all that kind of stuff. Plus, you know, plus the petrol heads, let's face it, that look down their noses at EVs because they're not sure. We'll be like, oh, hang on a minute, 9.9 seconds, quarter mile. What's happened here? So I just think they're going about business. Is it Wednesday? Is it the 9th? Yeah.
The 9th. Yeah, that's the big Wednesday.
I'm going to be glued to that live stream. I'm so excited.
And you know what I love about another thing I love about Lucid is Rawlinson. The guy's just cool as a cucumber. Like he doesn't go out there and you know talk about everything that they've done and what they you know he quite the opposite. I saw him in an interview recently. He's just like, look, we haven't accomplished anything yet. You know, like put that up against some of the other CEOs of some of the electric vehicle startups that we have so far and just how they just constantly talk smack and promise things that don't deliver. Rawlinson's just kind of like chilling out and being like, yeah, like we haven't done anything yet. Meanwhile, every week we're getting, you know, it's the fastest, it's the best, it's the most efficient. And he's just kind of sitting back and like, I'll let the car talk for us. And I mean, that's refreshing. I like the bravado too of some of the other CEOs. I mean, it's kind of, you know, you almost have to have a balance, but he's totally on the other side. And don't forget, like, he's like responsible for the Model S. I mean, Rawlinson, like, Elon basically said, build me a car, and gave Rawlinson the keys to the company. And he's the Model S, you know, and, you know, he did that 10 years ago, you know, so this is his version of the Model S, you know, 10 years later. And it seems so far, at least, as though he's improved upon every aspect of it.
Can I ask a quick question? Sorry, I know there's some stuff that we can talk about because you've spoken to the guys and some stuff we can't. But if I zoom in on a picture on their website, what is Wonderbox? Like, I want to know immediately now what Wonderbox is.
Oh, yeah.
Drive unit, enclosure, battery, Wonderbox. Yeah, that's number five is there.
Funny thing is, I've spoken to so many people and Rawlinson himself. I forget what's embargoed and what's not.
Just say anything.
I'm not sure if we can talk about it.
Yeah, but they have released pictures of it, and it looks like it's like a bunch of components together in one unit. That's what it appears like. Whereas some other cars might have these components housed separately. It seems like the Lucid, when they made everything so compact, kind of put a bunch of their different components in one unit. That's what it looks like.
It's similar to approach with Model 3, but it can do a little bit more than the 3 can do. And I Like Tom, I don't remember if we can talk about it.
Yeah, I can't, I'm not sure if we can, but I believe that. Okay, fine. I think Martin, you were outlining the Wonder Box with your cursor there on the screen a moment ago.
Yeah. So for audio listeners on the podcast, it's the rear of the car by the rear. The front. It's the front of the car. By the front drive unit. And it's so compact, like the. We know the,
can you
the
zoom
front,
in on that again?
We know the front on this is going to be mega, but it's at the front, so you've got the suspension arms, and then it's kind of tucked in where, I don't know, but behind where the infotainment unit would be, if I can explain it that way, almost where the, I don't know, where the transmission
it's
tunnel...
It's just amazing how compact all this stuff. I mean, the Wonder Box is hiding the electric motor. Really, you can't even see it. It's like smaller than the Model S motors.
The steering rack would be behind it. So to try and paint that picture, man, yeah, it's so smart. Like they just put it out there.
From a handling perspective, though, the one thing that's really noticeable about this chassis is there's no weight in front or behind the axles. It's very much a centrally mounted mid. Yeah. engine type setup here, which is really important for great handling balance, and that also means you can pretty much soften the suspension a lot, because now you don't need to have really stiff suspension to compensate for weight in the wrong parts of the car. So that gives you a ton of compliance. It also gives you tons of great handling dynamics, which we know two things this car is really going to have. So I think it's going to tick all the right boxes. Again, I don't know what the price point's going to be, but it's certainly looking to be the best EV ground-up design we've seen so far, and we haven't even seen the full reveal.
One of the nicest interpretations of an aero wheel as well, because some aero wheels just look terrible. Right. But that looks like...
At Porsche, their wheels on Taycan, their aero wheels are so ugly. And same with the Audi e-tron. But these guys are getting it right. They just need to go over there, visit with Lucid, and be like, what are you doing? Here's an open checkbook, and let's make the Taycan better. Because, I just drove the Taycan last week on the big turbo wheels, which are really nice, but not very efficient. So there's no balance at Porsche. It's either you get the fast one that looks great or the ugly one that goes pretty far.
Right. Right on. Okay, well, let's move along. So this is pretty interesting. Elon Musk says that the German Tesla Model Y will be a radical redesign of building a car. So, okay, Elon was just in Germany for about 4 days, checking out the progress of the Berlin Gigafactory, which is moving along quite quickly. Yeah, he took a number of questions from a gaggle of reporters and made some interesting statements. For instance, explaining the speed of construction, he explained that while the ground was being prepared, the building itself was being prefabricated, so that helps them get it up really quick, and that's part of the that's part of the secret to the super speed of construction here. He also mentioned that the factory would produce battery cells. There was some talk earlier that wouldn't be happening here, but apparently it is. And there'll also be design and engineering work happening there. And he says the paint shop will be the most advanced in the world. That kind of sounds like he said that before, but anyway, he's saying it for this. It will have like a multi-layer paint system. And interesting point, he also mentioned that they'd upgrade the one in the paint shop in the U.S., so at Fremont. But it was hard to say how serious he was being exactly, but, you know, we'll see. It certainly could use some upgrading. But anyway, on to the good stuff. Talking about the innovation they will do at the Giga Berlin, he said the Model Y built there won't just be a copy of what they're doing elsewhere. He said, and this is quotes, "It's actually a radical redesign of the core technology of building a car." He says he'll talk more about what they're doing on Battery Day. That's the 22nd of September. But to quote him again, he says, "There's going to be a transformation in the core structural design of the vehicle. It's quite a big thing." So it's manufacturing, engineering, and design as well. So what's this mean exactly? Well, I guess we'll find out on Battery Day. But the thing that struck me about this is that means that the Gigafactory in Texas, which they said would be building the Model Y for the eastern part of the U.S., besides the Model 3 for the eastern part of the U.S. and the Cybertruck, it will likely have this same system as they're doing it in Berlin, I would imagine, right? And so it would have, this re-engineered Model Y. So it seems unlikely to me that they'll sell a different version made in Fremont and one sold in Texas like simultaneously, that's who's going to buy like a Fremont Model Y when this radically redesigned other one is coming out of Texas. So yeah, it seems like they would have to overhaul Fremont factory, you know, to catch up with Texas once Texas gets online. So there's a lot going on here. Tom, do you have any ideas about what this change might be for Model Y? And do you think they'll tackle this before your Cybertruck?
So the biggest question that I have is, why does a car that's only been for sale for like 4 months need a radical redesign?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, and like, why would that be? You know, I know Elon promised a lot with the Model Y production, the manufacturing processes and materials used early on. And then when we watched the Sandy Monroe tear apart the Model Y, he was kind of, while he was impressed with some things, you know, his general, you know, take on it was, look, this isn't a radical redesign like we were promised. You know, they didn't eliminate whatever, you know, 500 meters of wire or something crazy that they were supposed to reduce. And some of the other things that were supposed to happen didn't happen. So maybe Elon is going to finally deliver what he was saying the Model Y was going to be initially Giga Berlin and then Giga Texas. But like, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if I'm just punking down 50 or 60 grand on a new Model Y now, I'm not happy that he's talking about, you know, I have old in a couple of months what I'm buying is old tech, and they're going to make radical changes to the vehicle. It's a little hard for me to understand, to be honest with you.
Right.
Whereas I'm delighted because the Model Y that I can buy, I can't buy one until next summer. The Model Y I can get in Europe is going to be coming out of Berlin, and this is going to be like Model Y version 2.0. Now, what it's funny, Elon is doing to cars what tech's been doing for ages. You know, whenever you buy a new phone or a new computer or something, you know, within about 5 minutes, you see it's been replaced, and then you think, I want the new stuff. And then, as Tom said, like 4 months into a car, all of a sudden he's going, no, wait, there's a better version of it that you're going to want.
Yeah, it's kind of like phones, right? Because you get the hardware updates, but then you also get the constant software updates.
Yeah.
It's very much like that.
Yeah. So because it's a different continent, it's you can do that with Model Y Europe, and you can have a, you know, version 2.0 of that next summer and have an entirely... this is in the news today, but he said it either on an earnings call. He said it already this year. Or he said it at some point. Elon has said already this year, the Model Y from Berlin will look the same on the outside. I think I'm going to paraphrase. It will look the same on the outside, but underneath that, it's going to be entirely different. Maybe it was on a call earlier this year, but of course, it's made the news again today. But who knows what that is? It's so many possibilities.
Right. Yeah, I was just about to ask Kyle if he thinks it's going to look the same or not, because after that, I couldn't, because they were talking about design, you know, re-engineering and design, like two separate things. So I was like, man, that would be kind of weird to have like a, you know, like a refresh of like the front or the back end or something, or no, you know, like a year after
it'll be the same, definitely be the same car, but okay. Underneath it'll be, there's so many things they can do, whether it is the casting, that whole rear end being a single piece, whether it's finally ditching lead acid batteries from electric vehicles, which is still a bonkers thing that we put old batteries into EVs, considering that we're driving on top of a big battery. But you know, whether it's whether it's changing the architecture of a car to like the lights and all that kind of stuff to a 48 volt system that runs off the traction battery, whether it is that radical redesign, rewiring and rethinking about how you wire a car, whether it's with, you know, hubs that are connected with network cable or something, you know, from the front to the rear of the car. There's just one cable going from back to front. All of those things is a possibility, and I wouldn't put it past them to do it all at once coming out of Berlin. But then, so how do they? I don't understand how they'll then navigate that with Texas. Whether they'll just do Cybertruck to begin with at Texas, and then eventually move Model Y out of Fremont. I can't think that one through.
Yeah, I guess. Well, hopefully we'll get some more direction on battery day, because I mean, I'm pretty sure they'll start with one car line first. I mean, they'll start producing either the Cybertruck or the redesigned Model Y, I guess. And then they'll build another part of the factory, and like they're doing in China, basically, I would assume they're going to do it the same way. You know, they put the Model 3 and now they're just starting to build Model Ys, I guess, in China, which is not the radically redesigned version. So yeah, it's kind of weird. But yeah, but China sales are going well, so I guess they're not too worried about that. Is there any thoughts about this, Kyle? Sorry.
Well, really quick, if you, one sec, Kyle. If you're in the U.S. now and you're thinking about getting a Model Y in the next few months, say you have a lease or up in 4 or 5 months, or you know you're it's just time for you to get a new car. Why would you rush out and buy a Model Y if perhaps you know this time next year there'll be a version that's radically improved? You know, I think they run the risk of cannibalizing their own sales by coming out with this type of statement. I know Tesla does things differently, but this is a little further than what they usually do.
What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, I tend to agree with Tom. Typically, you don't want to announce your new technology too far in advance for that very reason. However, I think what they're saying here really is it's not going to look any different. It's not going to drive any different. It's not going to have any impact on your ownership experience. It's just for manufacturing improvements. So I don't think the cars will drive any different. I don't foresee anything like that. So from that might be their angle. If someone walks into a Tesla store and says, "Hey, I want the new Model Y that's cast," they're just going to be like, "Yeah, there's not going to be any difference. Why would you care how your car is paid? If it went down the factory in 3 days or one, does it matter to you if you're taking delivery today?" I just think that's probably what we're going to see as their official, you know, way of handling this. Whether or not the cars are truly different or not in handling, we don't know. We have no clue even how they're going to make it. So too early to tell. I don't think it would deter me from buying a Model Y right now. The only thing that would deter me from buying a Model Y right now, and one of the reasons I haven't really pushed for it, is battery day. We don't know what Tesla is going to say. Are we going to see 100 kilowatt hour in S or in 3 and Y? Elon said no. Maybe we'll see 95. I don't know. I just feel like technology is the same from 2017 as it is today. It's time for another big leap from Tesla. We've seen Lucid can do it, and they're a startup. Right. So I feel like we're on the edge of something, another big leap coming here soon. And it's like, kind of don't buy your cars yet. Just wait to see what happens on the 22nd.
All right. Pretty exciting stuff. And that's when that next Wednesday, right? Is that? No. When is battery? No, 22nd, right? That's still.
Yeah, we've got a few weeks to wait for that. It's going to be 2 weeks on Tuesday. All right. So not long to wait. No,
so next week we find out. We see what Lucid has, and then we can see like a week or so after that if Tesla will catch up, will be ahead of them again, will leapfrog that, or if they'll just, you know, be like a head-to-head. And I really, even if they came out with like a redesigned or a replacement for the Model S, man, 9.9 seconds. This is still blowing me away, man, because right now they're like 10.4. That's like a half second on Tesla's best day.
I feel like Tesla can easily just rip a 9.9 and just turn things up to 11. They're pretty good at that. But what really matters is that efficiency and range number.
Yeah.
There are 100 and plus miles, more than 100 miles more on EPA than Model S. That's not easy to do. And so if you haven't yet taken a look at Jason Fenske's video and Car and Driver's article on how cars get rated in the EPA testing cycle and why Model S actually performs like twice as good as a Taycan, you should see how cars are rated, because you can see how Model S and Lucid will go through and do really well in that test. The question is, will Lucid suffer the same thing as the Tesla, which is on the highway? It's going to perform significantly worse than the EPA range. My guess is yes. It'll be interesting to see by how much, though.
Yeah, and that engineering explained video, I believe, is on the site. I'm not exactly sure what the title of the story is, but I'm sure if you search Tesla, the site search menu, the search function works really good now, by the way. If you've ever tried to search anything on Inside EVs before, it works so much better now. If we just do a fast chart or a quick search of Tesla, it'll probably come up. But we should move along because time's wasting. So switching gears now, the Škoda Enyaq IV was just revealed. It's got an illuminated grille and a potent RS version. That's RS stands for Rally Sport, I think, typically. Our European listeners will be pretty excited to hear about this. Škoda is a value brand, and this car is basically a sister to the VW ID4 that will be revealed on the 23rd of this month, I believe. So a lot of what we see here will be present on the ID4 as well. This crossover has three different battery sizes, 55, 62, and 82 kilowatt hours, and for some reason, five different power outputs, ranging from 146 horsepower all up to 302 horsepower. The range also varies with the battery pack and whether or not it's four-wheel drive or two-wheel drive, but the base model is said to do 211 miles WLTP, so that's probably going to be just under 200 miles on EPA. And the longest range version is the rear drive 82 kilowatt hour version with 317 miles of WLTP range. So that'll be probably, just under 300 miles at EPA range. So that's not bad. And actually this morning we actually got to see the interior of the ID4 as well. So you can get the basic outline of the ID4 by looking at the Enyaq IV. But we can also see some interior shots of the actual ID4 that's going to be the one that's coming here into the US. Hopefully by Christmas. It's going to be made in Chattanooga eventually in 2022, but I believe we're supposed to be getting some cell coming out of that German factory in, what is it, Wickau or something? But anyway, as you see on your screen, there is the interior of the ID4. And I don't know, what do you think, Kyle?
While we won't get the Škoda here in the U.S., I think it's a great look ahead at ID4, like you were saying. It kind of ticks all the right boxes. My main concern is there's just too many options. People aren't at a point where they understand kilowatt hour and power outputs with EVs in terms of kilowatts. So I think you just offer two versions, maybe three, but two is good. You get the cheap one and you get the good one. And I think you kind of choose which one of those. I think five powertrain options or five power outputs with three different battery packs, too many configurations. Other than that, car looks great, seems to tick all the right boxes. Range is going to be in that 250, 260 mile range. EPA is my guess for the big battery one. So it's not really blowing us away on numbers. But maybe they'll have a great leasing program. They're going to have to get on some value proposition here. But also, think about e-tron. A lot of people really like e-tron, but are not willing to write the $80,000 or $90,000 check that comes around with it. Right. This will be very similar to e-tron in terms of size, in terms of the ownership base, but also probably a significantly less costly option. So I think it's going to be a really great car for many people. And of course, they'll have access in the US to the Electrify America charging network so that you can kind of go anywhere you want to go. I mean, it seems to be pretty good. They're doing an okay job. But again, it's not a technical marvel like the Lucid. So it doesn't really excite me.
Right. This is basically what a Tesla Model Y competitor.
Yeah, but not as good on paper, it seems.
Right. I mean, so it's going to have to beat the Tesla Model Y in price, basically. It's just going to have to present a better value and just more accessible, more affordable.
They're just going to have a cheap lease with everything baked into it, and that's how they're going to sell them. That's really my prediction.
Right. So speaking of like multiple options, Martin, I understand you have some opinions about the fast charging options being presented here as well.
Oh yeah. So the Founders Edition, which is the one I went to immediately to see, well, what can our listeners buy straight away? Well, the Founders Edition is £49,000, but that's $65,000. But wait, there's 20% VAT in the UK. So 65, that's $13,000 off, but still an expensive car, still a $50,000 car for the Founders Edition. So I was like, this is great. 21-inch alloys, black leather. If that's your thing, I'd try and go for an animal cruelty-free interior, but matrix LED headlights, a good spec, right? And then there's the VRS badge and all those kind of things you can go for. 125 kilowatt charging, brilliant. Founders Edition, great. But then I was reading the small print, and all of the, if you're not buying that first Founders Edition, all of the cars, whether you've got the big battery, the small, because there's the three battery sizes, but the smallest one isn't on sale yet. As Kyle says, it's just a mind-bogglingly large array of options. But there's like the 50 and the 60 and the 80, 82 kilowatt hour battery pack. They can all charge really quickly, but you only get 50 kilowatt charging as standard. If you would like to charge faster, you got to tick the option. You got to pay more. This is as infuriating to me as when Porsche, and they still do, with the Taycan, it will charge very quickly on an 800 volt charger. But if you want to connect to a 400 volt system, which is a 100 kilowatts or 150 kilowatt charger, and not have your Taycan just trickle charge at 50, you've got to tick a box on the option list and pay more to have your car charge on anything, but basically all the chargers out there. And they're doing this the same with Skoda, and you presume it'll be the same with VW. And I don't know about you, but it's a 2021 model year car. 50 just seems so slow to my mind. But also, yeah. I tell you what, I'm frustrated. What's the thing that we haven't got enough of at the moment? Well, I would argue chargers in the world and educated buyers. Now, we're doing a lot, generally a lot's being done to fix both those things. But the kind of people, as we know, buying a VW or a Skoda EV, right? These aren't the people following Elon's every, move on Twitter. These are going to be people who don't really, how fast does it charge? They'll want to know in minutes, not kilowatts, but when I plug it in, how long do I wait? If you aren't dealing with an educated salesperson, if you are buying it online and don't know, because they're moving to an online model. So if you don't know to tick that box, you're going to get a car that just goes really slowly. And admittedly, when you get to about maybe 55 or 60% state of charge, maybe 70%, that's completely levelized. So what we're talking about is peak. You arrive with a low state of charge on a fast charger. If you've got 125 kilowatt charging speeds, you're going to get that big smash of speed quickly. Plug in, go get a coffee, dash 20 minutes, you're back on the road. And when you get to a higher state of charge, it already levels out and it goes below 50. But I found it so infuriating that they put faster charging into the car, but won't unlock it unless you pay more. The buyers of this car aren't going to be the kind of buyers that are knowing to. And there's two options. Like, you can either have 100 or 125 kilowatt charging, depending on the battery size. I found it so frustrating, but I didn't know if I was being irrational. So I texted you yesterday or day before to say, can I get a sense check from you? Because I'm frustrated by what seems needless shaking out money from people's wallets. Look, upgrade my seats, upgrade the sound system, give me a glass roof that I can pay more for, but don't muck about with the fundamentals of EVs, which is how fast, like the motors, the charging, because people don't care about inverters. Like, they just don't care. Don't make it an option. I got really annoyed at Skoda because what was potentially a great moment this week, sorry, it turned into a mini rant, a polite mini rant, but I was really annoyed. What do you think?
All right. So I have some thoughts on this. I think if you have the battery that can accept the charge rate, you give it the charge rate. One, it helps charger throughput, so cars can charge faster and more often, but also the car's designed for it. Just throw in the charge rate as long as there's no hardware differences. Unlike Taycan, which you mentioned, because they actually put a physically different DC to DC booster in that car. So I'm okay with them charging more on Taycan, because in the US, we don't have any 400 volt more than 50 kilowatt chargers. So it's not even a needed option in this country. I'm not sure about yours. So if I was buying a Taycan, I would spec it just in case I came across one for the $400. So I could say, look at what my Taycan's doing. But other than that, I would skip that. But yeah, this is really stupid. No question about it. You should put in the highest charge rate that the engineers feel is safe for that battery pack for a long-term, longevity. And that's it. And that's why I don't like the idea of ramping down DC charging speeds. A lot of people say, well, I'm plugged into a supercharger. Like, is there a way that I can make it charge slower so I can do more things when my car is plugged in? And the answer is it should not be possible, because the point of a DC charger is to get in and get your car out for the next person as soon as possible. So that's my take on it.
So yeah. I have, without going over everything you guys said, exactly the same feelings, and maybe a little bit of a different perspective. As you know, one of the things I do when I'm not writing for Inside EVs is I work with dealerships. I train dealership personnel on how to sell electric cars and really how to understand them. And it's hard enough just explaining level one, level two, and DC fast charge, let alone having to have this the client advisors then dive into five different options with different charging rate on DC fast charge and even all these different battery sizes. It's kind of like totally just an extension of what we've been saying so frequently, that the legacy OEMs just don't get it. They just don't, they still don't get electrification. And what it's going to happen is buyers aren't going to know what they're ordering. They're not going to understand why they might need this option. The salespeople, the people they talk to, aren't going to be able to fully explain to them why they might want it to charge faster or they don't need it to charge faster. And it's going to turn into a bad buying experience, bad ownership experience. And you're going to have people down the road saying, I hate this electric car. It takes me too long to charge it. It can't do what I need it to do. It's just another example of how the legacy brands they're still trying to force electric vehicles into their old model. They're not treating them like it's a different, it's just a new model to them. It's not a different model. And it is. Electric vehicles are fundamentally different. They need to be treated differently. You can't just, you know, it's like adding, take BMW, for instance. It's not the new 3 Series, you know, where they can do everything the same, just kind of upgrade their sales pitch and whatnot. It needs a totally different, system and way to sell the vehicles. And they all don't get it yet. It's maddening that we're this far down the road with electric vehicles, and these legacy brands really just don't get it. And I mentioned earlier that I talked to Peter Ralston, CEO of Lucid, but still embargoed information. We actually talked a lot about that and that exact subject. And it's kind of why people like Ralston and others in the industry realize that the real change is going to happen with the startups. It's not going to happen with the legacy brands. They are incapable of making radical change and taking a totally new product like this, electric vehicles, and running with it properly.
Right. Yeah. What does this do to the used car market? So if in 3 years' time I go along and I want to do a private sale, I want to buy someone's Skoda or VW ID4 or any of the cars on the MEB platform that they do this with, and I say to the guy, okay, it's a good price. I like the specs. What charging rates it got? And he'll look at me and go, I don't know. Like, can we go on the menu in the car? Do I get on my back and look underneath? Is there going to be a sticker that says this car charges at this speed? It's going to be all these cars for sale in a few years' time that all charge at different rates because they did this incredibly stupid option at the beginning. Now, I had people come back at me on Twitter this week and say, hang on a minute. Like, when Tesla get a car back in and sell it as a CPO car, they're turning off lifetime supercharging. They're turning off what else? Like the unlimited data. So you get a used car from Tesla. You get like 1 month free trial for the data. And it used to be lifetime or 3G, 4G, 5G, whatever. And hey, look at Bjorn Nealon's videos in Norway. He's testing old Teslas, and in order to make them last longer, Tesla are dipping into the car and turning down the charge rate. And people said, you know, you're just a hypocrite for complaining about this because Tesla are doing it, but you don't aim at them. And I think this is, in my mind, it's fundamentally different, but I also hear how I could sound irrational. So I'm trying to bring those two things together.
Yeah. Well.
it could just be me.
No, sometimes it's not just you. It's just, you know, I'm the first one to kind of jump on Tesla for things that they do wrong. But I also think it's different when you're doing it to when you're launching a new vehicle and you're creating all this confusion, as opposed to when you're looking at the data from your older vehicles, and maybe, you know, I mean, let's face it, Tesla's still a new brand, and realizing, hey, you know, 4, 5, 6 years down the road, you know, we do need to throttle back the charge rate, because people that are using too much DC fast charge, it is harming the batteries, and we think the customers would prefer to have a longer battery life than save 5 minutes every time they charge. So I get your point, but it is a different, it's two different topics to discuss.
It's a different calculation. Yeah. But I'm pretty excited about the ID4. I kind of like the way it looks. It looks like a nice size. Actually, if you look on the Inside EV's website and put ID.4 in the little search, thing, go to the ID4 interior post from today, and there's a little down the page, there's a little back and forth slidey thing, so you can see the interior of the ID3, which is available in Europe but not the US. Yeah. And the ID4, and the ID3 is fine, but man, the ID4, it's kind of nice. It's like the sort of same approach as Tesla, it's just a little more just slightly different, a little more stylized in some ways. Maybe a few more buttons here and there. I think I prefer the screen in the Model 3 personally, but yeah, the form, it looks pretty decent. But while we're talking about the Volkswagen, another little piece of news: the ID buggy, which is like was like a little Doom buggy thingy we saw. Yeah, that's the one. So apparently it's going to be reinvented as an affordable off-road EV. I think they had a company already pegged that was going to build this for them, I guess in maybe a smaller production run. But so there's some issue. I think the company went out of business or something. So they're rethinking this whole ID buggy approach. So yeah, it could be like an affordable off-road thing. And they've also just trademarked the name E-thing, which throws back to a 70s version of kind of like a Jeep sort of Volkswagen thing. If you search Volkswagen thing, you'll see some pictures of it. And we've seen actually in the past people electrify versions of that, which is a pretty funky looking old car. I personally like it, love it. Yeah, Kyle, you have any thoughts about this?
Yeah, I want one so bad. Obviously, I love cool things like this. The E thing is so awesome. How nice would it be just to bomb around the beaches in the Outer Banks here in North Carolina in one of those things? It's just the coolest thing ever. You know, the thing that we're really lacking right now are fun electric vehicles. So you really don't have anything. You have extremely capable cars. We have Taycan. We have extremely practical cars for cost. You have Model 3 and Model Y. Where's the one to put with the smile on your face? Right. There really isn't anything out there. I think the electric smarts for sure are pretty good, but you can't buy them in the US anymore. There's nothing that's small and fun and tossable. And other than the Arcimoto, I'm not really super interested in anything that's like super quirky like that.
Right. Yeah, there's no convertibles. So I'm kind of hoping
was the last convertible. And so that's what I drive every day for the most part around here. And yeah, I guess you're right. There's no electric convertibles. I hadn't even thought about that. What a bummer.
Yeah. I just kind of like convertibles, and yeah, I want an electric one. And this could have a convertible top possibly. I mean, the thing came in with a convertible and a hard top, right? Yeah. So it's just kind of nice because it'll
definitely be a convertible. The Germans love convertibles, right? They make a convertible of everything. So why wouldn't they?
Okay.
But you know, like VW have 300,000 people working for them. Just take 300 of them. Like that's a tenth of 1%, and say, go and play with EVs. It's the future of our business. Yeah. If we want to be in business in 20 years time, 300 people go and make buggies and convertibles and stupid stuff and things that go fast on drag strips and things that, you know, you can take to the moon and Mars, and just do it because it's going to get press and publicity. And maybe they are doing that. I don't know, but I don't see the fruits of that. It's such a small, just give them a budget and tell them to go play, go make the buggy and do 1,000 of them as a limited run. It's VW. It's the biggest
car company in the world by some metrics. It's frustrating.
Yeah, I'm just glad that it's not going to be just like a, they're just not going to produce a bunch of crossovers of slightly varying size, you know, just, yeah, like you say, something fun that you can just, oh man, aspirational.
Well, they did say they're going to reinvent it into some sort of an all-wheel drive recreational vehicle. You know, it's not going to be as outlandish as this. I mean, I love the e-buggy too. I mean, I love the idea of the e-buggy, but you know, the bean counters are going to, you know, factor in on here and say, hey, how many of these things are we going to sell? And you know how much it costs to engineer and produce a vehicle in a low run like that. If they sell a few thousand of them, I mean, it would be disastrous for the books. But it could be great, as Martin said, for just public relations and just, you know, introducing fun and you know, to electrification. But I mean, I thought it was such a cool vehicle, but it looks like a 70s cartoon vehicle, which is cool. But would they sell enough of them where it wouldn't be, you know, such a financial drain if they could take the money and put it into, invest it into a vehicle that is still fun and is still recreational, but more people might be interested in it, then that might be the better play.
Well, that's a great thing about having that platform underneath the MEB toolkit platform. You know, that development cost has already, you know, been sunk, so they can, you know, use that. And when they develop like something fun like this Doom Buggy, you know, it's like takes away a lot of that development cost. It's still going to be something. It's still going to be, you know, probably significant, really, to be honest. But
yeah, well, look, VW have said that from day one, every MEB car they sell will be profitable. Like, they're good at making cars. They haven't put a car on the road that's a loss leader.
Right.
So that, like, they know how to do this. So sensibly, they could easily do these kind of things. I just wish they'd get on and make them.
Yeah. Okay. So moving right along, we just got a few minutes left. So another big intro into the world of plug-in vehicles this week is the 2021 Jeep Wrangler 4XE plug-in hybrid. They just debuted. It's got 25 miles of all-electric range. Jeeps are pretty thirsty beasts, and now plug-in hybrid technology has finally caught up with this American icon. It joins the Renegade and Compass 4XE models that began arriving in European showrooms this summer. It still wears its trail rated badge, but now you can do it in stealth mode. Jeep pairs this a turbocharged 2.2-liter engine with two electric motors and a 400 volt 17 kilowatt hour battery that sits under the second row seats. It produces in a total of 375 horsepower and 470 pound feet of torque, which I believe is more than the diesel version. I think I read. That's more torque than the Equal Diesel has, like 442 feet pound of torque. So this is a pretty great thing. I'm personally not a big Jeep person. I like the way they look, but the roads down here are like overrun with them, and only a small fraction of them ever go off road and use that capability that they have. But at least this way, people can get the Jeep they want to be seen driving in and not be burning stupid amounts of gasoline. So there's that. Anyone got a couple words?
Yeah, big fan. Love it. My sister has the 2-liter turbocharged version of this JL Wrangler, and hers is a mild hybrid, which is one of the reasons we chose it. Okay. And that's just a little tiny electric motor on the back end of the front end of the transmission, back end of the motor, that it basically prolongs start-stop period and provides a little bit of boost. But this is the next step. And so I actually sent this story to my sister yesterday and said, hey, what do you think about this? And she said, oh, man, I got to get one. So you know, there's people that are just absolute Jeep lovers. I'm not one of them. I think they're cool. She is definitely one of them, but she takes it on the beach. We've taken it off-roading, so she uses it properly as much as she can, at least. And this way, she has free charging at her apartment. She could do her commute round trip to work, zero emission in this, and that would be pretty dang cool. So she is all about it, and I think it's great for that application.
Right on. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how it is up there, but down here, man, they're so super popular. They're like everywhere. And, you know, I kind of like them, but I've never driven them. I think I've sat in them a few times.
Yeah, they don't drive that great. And she's down by you in Florida. She's in Tampa. And, yeah, they're on every corner down there for sure.
Yeah. So speaking of Jeep, they also revealed the Grand Wagoneer plug-in hybrid concept, which is very production-looking ready. Jeep is bringing back the Wagoneer name for family vehicles, and this looks like it's the granddaddy of them all. It's a huge, honking huge SUV. It looks pretty premium inside and out, which is good because I think it's going to start around $60,000 and it'll probably be up to 100K by the time you load it up with options. But anyway, the best part of this, to me at least, is that it's a plug-in hybrid, or at least the concept is. I think there's going to be different versions available when it comes out. It would be super, super thirsty without the hybrid drivetrain. So we don't really have any details about the powertrain here, but you can see it. Tom, would you take this over a Range Rover?
If it was all electric, I'd be interested in seeing how big of a battery and what the all electric range is going to be on the vehicle. I love the Wranglers that they're making the plug-in hybrid. I really love that it has more power than the diesel version. I think that's really important that, you know, we continue along those lines of showing how electrification actually makes the vehicle better, not just more efficient. But 25 miles of range, it doesn't really excite me that much. And I would imagine on this vehicle, they probably will have even less range because it's such a big, heavy vehicle. And I think the plug-in hybrid system is just really meant to help get better gas mileage. So, you know, I'll reserve judgment until we see what type of powertrain they put in there. I'd love to see something like this all electric and go right up against, say, the Rivian's SUV, or now we saw a picture of the Lucid's upcoming all electric SUV. Come on, Fiat Chrysler, get on the ball and give us a competent, fully electric sport utility vehicle and let the people decide which powertrain they prefer.
Yeah, I was looking at this and I'm thinking, you know, that Hummer EV in the SUV style, it has a pickup truck and an SUV version of it. Mm-hmm. And I would take the Hummer EV over this. I mean, this looks like maybe more fancy, more premium probably, but actually the Hummer EV is, the interior is pretty nice too in its own way, and it's got a lot more performance than this. So yeah, there's that. Let's see how they match up on price. That'll be the next thing. But we're just about out of time, but I want to hit a couple of things really quick. So former Formula One driver Nico Rosberg revealed this week that he bought a Rimac Concept 2 or C2, which is supposed to be getting an actual name sometime. I don't think we've seen the actual final production version of the C2 yet. So that's kind of neat. And also, if you didn't see it, Rimac is, last week we had a post talking about the Rimac, the C2 getting a Roadster model, which it would be interesting as well. And I like, this is a great, if you haven't seen this video, you should go back. Not just the Roadster part is just like a small aside that just kind of mentioned that in there. But it's mostly about the monocoque, like the chassis of the Rimac Concept 2, which is, it's a thing of beauty. And the engineer, he goes over in this video, you know, all about the design, the crash structure, how it's just an amazing piece of work. And, you know, I just like people to have a chance to really dive deep and take a good look at that. But real quick, before we go, we should touch on what's charging up in our driveways. I believe, Kyle, you have a Nissan Leaf.
Yeah, I have sort of a short, long-term Nissan Leaf. I have it for a few weeks, at least maybe a month. And it's a SL Plus. It's the new one, the big battery. And Tom's done a review on it. He's done the range test. I'm going to repeat it all just as we normally do, and we'll just average out the results. Nothing too exciting. It's great. It's going to be a really hot week this week, you know, in the 100-degree range, if not more. And it'll be really interesting to see how an air-cooled battery can handle that with DC fast charging. And I went yesterday to the Electrify America station right down the street from my house and plugged it in, and it did 23 kilowatt because the battery was just touching the red. So, I mean, it's going to be a rough week for sure. with this thing, or a rough few weeks, I should say. But yeah, we'll see how it does. I mean, it's got a lot of range, no question there. 225-ish miles it was predicting at a full charge, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad. And this is another value play vehicle, sort of, you know, it's like, I believe it starts at 28,000 or so, and there's still some federal tax credit on that.
Yeah, but well, it starts more, I forget, but this one's $46,000, which is just a lot of money for, like, even if you get 10 grand off and then the tax credit, I'd still just buy a Model 3 standard. Like, I just don't, yeah. I don't get it. I just, in the Southeast, we need thermal management on our battery packs that are more than just ambient air temp. And I mean, I personally have such a huge issue with this, even after my one experience. Maybe at the end of the 3 weeks, I'll be convinced that we don't need liquid thermal management, but I don't think that'll be the case.
No, no. We'll see thermal, liquid thermal management on the Nissan Ariya crossover when that comes out. And it can't come soon enough, really.
It did. Yeah, and Shamo is just so clunky. And I was like plugging it into the station. Of course, I had Electrify America issues yesterday trying to get the dang thing started. And, I couldn't get the app to activate the charger. They couldn't. I finally put my credit card in and then it worked. And it was like a whopping 23 kilowatt. And it was, I think, $5 to gain 5 kilowatt hours, something like this. It was just ridiculously expensive because the car was charging so slow. Anyway, I only lasted about 15 minutes at that charger. I'm like, I'm just going to go home.
Yeah, and yeah, that's a really thing. They really need to smooth out all these pain points for mass adoption, because that's just not acceptable. Hey, so you have this little trick that you do with your Model 3, Kyle, when you're fast charging. You put like a wet rag around the handle or something, and that allows you to charge faster. Have you had a chance to try that with the Leaf, or will you try that?
Leaf doesn't need it, because the handle on the chat mode doesn't really get hot. I mean, even 50 kilowatts, 125 amp at most at any voltage. It's not enough to really heat up that big connection. But the Tesla that's doing 600 amps through a little tiny connection, that's going to have a ton of heat loss, resistive heating. And that's why I cool down the little sensor on the handle to allow for faster charging longer. But yeah, no need on the CHAdeMO, because it's the battery that's hot, not the connection. But if I could wrap the battery in a cold, wet cloth, I would do that.
Dom, you mentioned quickly earlier about the pricing. You don't get the 62 kilowatt hour battery on the Leaf at the $28,000 price point. That's the smaller battery.
Right. Wishful thinking over here. Yeah, I have a hard time. Like, I kind of like the exterior of the Leaf, and the interior is kind of nice, but when it came down to it, I would choose like the Bolt EV over the Leaf.
Yeah, a used Bolt, a used Model S for 20 grand. You buy Model S's for like 18 grand now, by the way. Let's not forget that. Yeah, I would just go buy a Model S 85 high mileage car and over any one of these little things, because I just don't know how you're supposed to live with this. The size of the car is great. It drives reasonably well. The ProPilot's pretty good, but it's not like the interior is kind of really cheap feeling for 46. Start putting on panels and it's like really bad.
Right. Well, yeah, that's a lot of money. Well, let's see. I think we should wrap it up. We're in over an hour now. So that brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section down below, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom is at Tomalog. Martin is at EV News Daily. Kyle is at Out of Spec. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all next week. Ciao.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. If you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. Choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.